Iran says that the U.S. president's allegations that a country is destabilizing West Asia is nothing but a failed rhetoric. The Qatari emir says Israel is increasing instability in the Middle East by expanding settlements, blockading Gaza, and changing the demography of Al-Quds. Plus, a Palestinian teenager is under arrest for allegedly running over an Israeli officer near the city of Ra'anana. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Now, beginning with our top story, Iran saying that the United States is trying to foment tension and crisis in West Asia by resorting to the failed policy of Iranophobia. Foreign Ministry spokesman made a comment in reaction to a U.S. president who accuses Iran of destabilizing activities in West Asia region. Kanani also slammed Biden for raising false allegations regarding Tehran's peaceful nuclear energy program, while ignoring decades of deception by the Tel Aviv regime as the largest possessor of nukes in the region. In an address to the GCC Plus 3 summit in Jeddah, Joe Biden said the United States will remain as an active player in the region and will not walk away to, quote, leave a vacuum to be filled by China, Russia, or Iran. The U.S. president's visit to West Asia has seen new rhetoric against Iran by Washington and its ally, Tel Aviv. The two sides have signed a declaration that pledges more military support for Israel and claims to counter what they call Iran's threats. Tehran has denounced the declaration and rhetoric by the U.S. president threatening to use force against the Islamic Republic.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid have reiterated their anti-Iran positions in a joint declaration. The two leaders signed this statement after holding a one-on-one meeting on Thursday morning in occupied territories, on the second day of Biden's four-day tour of West Asia. The statement says that the U.S. will use all elements of national power available to it to deny Iran the ability to arm itself with nuclear weapons. The joint declaration also includes a pledge by Washington to continue U.S. military aid to Israel. Hours after the announcement of the declaration, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi warned of harsh and regrettable responses, saying any interventions of foreign powers in the region only results in crises and destabilization, while describing Iran's military power as a security factor. Observers believe that the unconditional support of the U.S. for Israel as the only regime that openly threatens Iran with military aggression can further embolden Tel Aviv.
I don't think that Biden's visit to the Middle East has really anything to do about with arms sales. I think that essentially he's come first and foremost to try to get the Saudis to push up oil production to try to bring down prices at the gas pumps in the United States as Biden moves toward November 5th midterm elections for Congress and the Senate, where right now he's expected not to do too well. What I think this stems from is Israel's push to try to get the United States thinking somehow that they're going to intimidate Iran, which is ludicrous. That's not going to happen.
Iran topped the agenda of talks between the U.S. president and Israeli officials during the latest regional tour by Biden. They discussed Iran's nuclear energy program and its military might, which they label as a threat to the region, and that while the U.S. has been pushing for the formation of a NATO-style military alliance against Iran in this part of the world.
U.S. President's visit to the region comes as Washington and Israel have been pushing for an alliance of regional countries against Iran, the so-called Arab NATO. At the heart of such military alliance lies the perceived threat from Iran. Iranian officials have repeatedly denounced the destabilizing activities of Israel as the main source of insecurity in the region, warning regional countries of the perils of allowing the regime to establish a foothold in the region. Regional states and nations will not achieve stability and peace as long as the fake Israeli regime remains the first stop of U.S. President's trips, with the main target being to preserve the regime's security and dominance. The Islamic Republic of Iran considers the security of its neighbors as its own security. Despite the growing relations between Israel and the Persian Gulf countries amid gradual American withdrawal from the region, several observers consider the emergence of a genuine NATO-style alliance unlikely.
You understand how much more powerful Iran has become in the region precisely because of its alliance with China and Russia. And so if you look at the offshoot of this, is that any threat to Iran also becomes a threat to Russia. Now, Israel, you know, people in Tel Aviv, they understand this. They understand that there's been a shift in the balance of power in the region, and this frightens them. The reaction has been the attempt to build some sort of Middle East NATO. And that's not going to fly. It's not going to fly any more than the talk of European unity. That doesn't exist vis-a-vis Russia. You know, it's just a contrived narrative.
A number of controversial questions are being posed by those analyzing Biden's visit and the so-called Arab NATO. The first question is whether the Arab states need such an alliance. Is the existing joint Arab defense framework so useless that it must be replaced by this new regional NATO? Second, the pact expects to be formed against Iran, but there are differing views on Iran's policies in the region. To include Israel, an occupier of Arab lands, in a new framework against Iran would only exacerbate the regional crises. In fact, a number of Arab officials have openly said in the past few days that their countries would not be a part of an alliance against Iran. And last but not least, not every country has normalized relations with Israel to form a common pact.
The Emir of Qatar has slammed Israel as the major source of tension in the Middle East. Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani says instability will persist in the region unless the regime stops the violations of international law. The Qatar Emir noted that Israeli settlement constructions, attempts to change the demography of Al-Quds, and blockade of Gaza's Strip are the root causes of instability and tension. He called for a just solution to the Palestine issues, stressing that the matter is a central cause for Arab and Muslim people. Sheikh Tamim made the remarks during a GCC Plus 3 summit in Jeddah. Okay, let's move on with the rest of this broadcast. Israeli police saying that an officer has been killed after being run over by Palestinians at a checkpoint in the occupied lands. That happened near the city of Rainana. Police have identified a Palestinian as a 17-year-old from the occupied West Bank area of Ramallah. They say he's been arrested. No further details available at this point. Tensions have run high in the occupied territories recently as the Israeli military cracking down on Palestinians. More than 60 people have been killed by Israeli forces this year, many of them in raids. At least 19 people have also been killed in Israel in attacks by Palestinian individuals since March. Mona Kandil has the latest about the car ramming incident. Let's take a listen.
Well, it's the Israeli military statement claiming that a 17-year-old Palestinian, originally from an area near Ramallah, this Palestinian teen was chased by Israeli police because they are claiming that he hit an Israeli police officer and killed him when he was driving a vehicle, a stolen vehicle. This is according to the Israeli police narration. Following this incident, Israeli troops chased this Palestinian teen who left his vehicle and he was running, of course, on his feet. And then at the end of the day, they arrested him. It's not clear up till the moment what are the motives or the real story what happened. But up till the moment, we can say, according to the Israelis, that a 17-year-old Palestinian teen was arrested after he ran over Israeli police officer and killed him in the area of Ra'anana, near Tel Aviv Central, Israel, the land occupied in 1948.
Well, a new Omicron variant has been detected in South Korea, with growing concern among public about public apathy. There has been 40,000 also new cases this week. We have a report by Frank Smith from Seoul.
Yet another wave of COVID-19 is hitting South Korea, with cases doubling to 40,000 per day in the past week. The BA.5 Omicron subvariant accounts for almost a third of the new cases, a portion that is increasing. While experts recognize vaccines may not always prevent infection, they decrease illnesses and deaths.
Even people who have been infected with Omicron before are not able to develop enough immunity to this variant unless they are vaccinated. People who have been fully vaccinated and boosted but become infected have reduced chances of severe illness of 70 to 90%.
The fatality rate of COVID-19 has dropped to near the seasonal flu. Still, experts argue that changed behaviors of mask wearing and routine vaccinations should remain in place.
The recent spike in COVID-19 cases here comes as South Korea Thursday detects the first case of BA.2.75, nicknamed Centaurus. Scientists worry this highly mutated Omicron variant is even more transmissible than previous strains.
Some want stronger antivirus enforcement, suggesting public apathy risks another COVID-induced economic downturn.
I know that more than 90% of corona can be prevented by wearing a mask, but if people keep coming inside and taking off their masks, I feel like it will be impossible to stop the spread. So the government should take stronger measures in that area.
People are required to wear masks on transit, but the government has said it will not implement lockdowns. People over 50 will be offered fourth vaccinations next week. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The International Committee of Red Cross says that Yemeni women and children are dying on a daily basis due to poor health care services in their war-torn country. Abdullah Tifel Washali reports from capital Sana'a.
Despite the UN brokered truce, the consequences of the Saudi led war are still taking the lives of Yemeni women and children. A recent report by the International Committee of the Red Cross says a mother and six newborns die every 2 hours in Yemen of complications that occur during pregnancy and causes that can be avoided in normal circumstances.
There is a severe shortage of medical supplies and medicines, as well as a significant increase in the prices of medicines, which has led to the deterioration of health services not only in the countryside, but even in main cities.
We as gynecologists have noticed a significant increase in the number of abortions, especially premature abortions in the early stages of pregnancy. Therefore, we hope to conduct studies that will reveal to us the reason and whether or not the prohibited weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition contributed to this tragedy.
The committee says the numbers are likely to increase due to a lack of health services or poor care provided, especially amid a shortage of funding for the United Nations programs in Yemen, as well as the termination of aid related to reproductive health and mother and child health.
The deteriorating economic situation has increased malnutrition among mothers, which has had a negative impact on newborns. The blockade of Yemen, which has kept medicines and medical supplies from entering the country, has resulted in an increase in death recently, and there are indications that the abortion rate has increased.
Recently, most of the United Nations programs, including the World Food Program, announced the suspension of their humanitarian activities in Yemen due to a lack of funding, as well as the consequences of the Russia-Ukraine war.
Yemeni health officials say 19 million Yemenis lack access to health care. They say it is a shame for the international community to abandon Yemeni women and the children who have been paying the highest price since the beginning of the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A sizable number of lawmakers blame the West's aggressive foreign policy toward Moscow for the cost of living crisis currently impacting EU citizens. The 27-nation bloc is facing an energy crisis, and that after cutting off oil imports from Russia over the conflict in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes reports.
A debate in the European Parliament has heard that 22% of people in the EU are struggling to make ends meet. That's almost 100 million citizens who are counting every cent. Apparently, sending weapons to Ukraine is not the answer.
The best way to deal with the cost of living crisis is to stop prolonging the war. The people of Europe favour peace, even well above punishing Russia.
EU financial markets are in turmoil. There are calls for the introduction of a windfall tax.
Energy prices and food prices are going through the roof. Capitalists make profits by speculating on markets and thereby hurting millions of households.
Members of the public have been talking to us about the current state of the EU's economy.
It's terrifying to see that our free market is like collapsing. All the money that we are going to send to Ukraine, then we will have to need this money, and where we are going to take this money from.
The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has been singled out for criticism in the European Parliament.
We don't know about the increase of cost of living in the European Union, which is just a result of the insane and unsound policies promoted by the European Union since Ursula von der Leyen took office.
There have been calls for greater solidarity between EU member states to deal with the cost of living crisis.
In order to make sure that we are not at the end dividing Europe in those who are able to help and those who have more difficulties.
On sanctions against Russia, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has said, quote, "Initially I thought that we had only shot ourselves in the foot, but now it is clear that the EU economy has shot itself in the lungs and is gasping for air." Many here agree. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that's a wrap for this broadcast from Tehran.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, July 17th, 2022. I'm Atefer Fani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, or messages. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. If you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice and send it to us. And of course, hear your voice in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Especial is your program. It's your views that are important. Don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. And dear listeners, tomorrow, 18th of the Islamic month of Dhul-Hajj, corresponding with July 18th, 2022, marks Eid al-Qadir. So, Eid al-Qadir Mubarak, happy Eid al-Qadir. For the information of some of our listeners, Shia Muslims across the world observe Eid al-Qadir, marking the anniversary of an important event in the history of Muslims. This occasion commemorates the pivotal gathering at Qadir Khum when Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on a divine command from God Almighty, designated Hazrat Ali as his successor. So again, happy Eid al-Qadir. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. And as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. You know why? Because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our great listeners around the world. So, all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us or an eQSL card from us. So here, I mention the name of those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Anand Mohan from India, Thomas Kotas from Poland, and Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. So Anand, Rob, and Thomas, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And of course, we've received many emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. Muhammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners from the US, has sent us an email. From India, we've received an email from Machi Raju Subha. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Dario Gabrielli from Italy has sent us an email, and we've received an email from Alan Willey from Canada. Stay with us, please. After a short break, I will be back with these great emails. Welcome back. As I said, Muhammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners from the US, has sent us an email. Let's see what Muhammad says. The public now knows that Biden is incompetent, and they're finally beginning to speak the obvious truth. The public has lost confidence in Joe Biden, lost confidence due to incompetent withdrawal from Afghanistan, and cannot control the worst inflation since 1970. Joe Biden, as an incompetent leader, is unable to solve the country's mounting problems. He has been stripped bare like the naked emperor. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, and IRIB English Radio. Mohammad Khaku from the U.S., thank you very much for sending us this piece of information and this piece of email regarding the world developments, as you describe Biden as an incompetent leader, regarding his failures within the United States and abroad, especially in the West Asia region. It's really great that you care about the world developments and follow the news regarding the United States. Mohammad Khaku from the U.S., thank you for sending us this email. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Mohammad Khaku, write to us soon, write to your radio. We are looking forward to hearing from you. And from India, we've received an email from Machiraju Suba. Let's see what Machiraju says. Dear IRIB English Radio, greetings. I listen to your listeners' special program through parstoday.com internet stream. Well, it was so joyful to hear the comments of other listeners from different countries, and music in the program was just nice. Thank you all for this interesting broadcast. Salam and warm greetings to you, Machiraju Suba from India. Thank you for telling us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcasts, especially your favorite program listeners special. And that's great. It seems that you enjoy the comments of other listeners around the world. And of course it is. And you enjoy the music, and we should thank our producer, Mr. Khoshnavisan, for broadcasting great music in this program. Machiraju Suba from India, thank you very much for telling us your views about IRIB English Radio programs, especially listeners special. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. Machiraju Suba from India, my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with another email from one of our old and regular listeners, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India. Stay with us. Welcome back. So, as I said, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Jayanta says, dear friends, as a long-time regular listener to IRIB English Radio, I have something to share with you. I have just enjoyed this beautiful video on Iran made by an Indian blogger on Shiraz in South Central Iran. I would like to share my wonderful experience with you and with all members of IRIB English team. The video is attached to this email. I hope you enjoy it. With warm regards from India. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Thank you very much for the video you attached to this email. Yes, we've received it and we really enjoyed the video. It was about the city of Shiraz in South Center of Iran. Thank you for that. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, thank you again for this great email. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. And we've received an email from one of our old listeners, from Dario Gabrielli from Italy. Dario says, dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, with great pleasure, I received your reply. I'm very happy that you received the viewing report sent some time ago via your webpage and email. To send the first listening reports, I used the website because I didn't know your email, but when I was able to listen to it, I started writing by email. I want to inform you that every week I listen to the broadcast in English because I don't like listening to internet radio. Together, via this email, I am attaching the QSL card that I have received from both the Italian and Spanish services during the various years I have listened to. Hoping for your news, I wish you a good continuation from the northeast of Italy. First of all, salam, ciao, warm greetings to you, Dario Gabrielli from Italy. Many thanks for sending us this detailed email. Please accept our appreciations to you. We are so happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received in your region in northeast Italy. It's great. So you like listening to IRIB English Radio via, shortwave, and that's normal. Yes, that's quite normal because most people like the traditional type of listening to radio, and that is via shortwave. So my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation to your email. Thank you again, Dario Gabrielli from Italy. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Canada from Alan Vili. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as I said, Alan Vili from Canada has sent us an email. Alan says, "Dear staff, greetings once again from Newfoundland, Canada. Here is another set of reception reports of IRIB shortwave broadcast as monitored here in Newfoundland during the past few weeks. I wish to receive an EQSL card from your site. Salam and warmest greetings to you from Tehran and from Iran. Alan Vili from Canada. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Of course, my colleagues soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And we are very happy that the signals of IRIB English Radio are received clearly in your region in Newfoundland, Canada. Thank you for that. Thank you for this email. Alan Vili, why don't you tell us your views about our broadcasts? Why don't you tell us which program or programs you like the best? Yes, in your upcoming emails, please tell us the points. Alan Vili from Canada, we are looking forward to hearing from you soon. So, time tells me that we have to wrap up the program. Thank you all for sending us these reception reports and emails. So, I want those of our listeners who sent us emails and letters or reception reports accept our warm appreciations, including Alan Vili from Canada, Thomas Kotas from Poland, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, Anand Mohan from India, Jayant Chakrabarty from India, Mohammad Khaku from the US, Machi Raju Suba from India, and Dario Gabrielli from Italy. We had a good time. We wish you all the best. Please keep in touch with your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio, and of course your favorite program, Listens Special. Have a good time. Write to us soon. Goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with RIB English Radio.
Us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The Spotlight. I'm Kavitat Wayne. While the U.S. President Joe Biden assured Arab leaders the United States would remain fully engaged in West Asia as he wrapped up his first tour of the region since taking office, some countries like Iran may be asking the question, who asks you to be engaged? Well, Biden has tried to spread Iranophobia amongst the GCC countries of the Persian Gulf, but it did not really go as planned, at least the way that he wanted. When he says, for example, quote, we will not walk away and leave a vacuum to be filled by China, Russia, or Iran, is he saying that Israel will do that through an integration or defense pact, something that was not even discussed during his visit to Saudi Arabia? First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joins us from Marseille in France. Also joining us is Hamilton's Coalition to Stop the War, Kent Stone, who joins us from Hamilton, Ontario.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Elijah Magnier, let me first start with you. The U.S. president has left Saudi Arabia at this point. I'm sure you're well aware of it. There was lots of talk about the different goals that he had while he was there. Of course, lots of media coverage on this. What did he achieve during this visit to Saudi Arabia?
Thank you for having me. First of all, what he achieved is to show how he cannot maintain a word that he gave when he considers Saudi Arabia as a pariah. And he will maintain it as such. Secondly, he also confirmed that the United States is pragmatic and it has its interest in the first place and nothing else. And it looks after what the benefit it can get from all the country dealing with, and in particularly in the Gulf state. Thirdly, the Gulf countries agreed to increase the oil production in the couple of months in the summer when the request is high, particularly in the West and in Europe. And due to the war in Ukraine, it is not possible, as Saudi Arabia said, to replace a country like Russia that produces 9.5 million, well, it used to be 10.4, but now it's 9.5 million barrels per day, and the Gulf countries cannot replace it. We heard also that he could not use the word if Iran, because we heard the Saudi foreign minister saying that only diplomacy is a language. Biden confirmed with the Gulf that what Iran has confirmed, that it doesn't want to have a nuclear bomb, and they said, we don't want a nuclear bomb. At the end of the day, Biden wanted to come to the Middle East to beg the Saudis and the Emiratis to pump more oil. And what we have seen, something very important for the Palestinian to see, how he spent only 4 hours, and he said he will give them $200 million when he said he will give Israel $38 billion. So he did not mention the solution of the Palestinian problem. He did not mention the state of Palestine, if he's going to work toward it or not. He said only it is complicated. We all know that. It's been going on for the last 70 years. So his achievement basically is he broke the ice between Saudi Arabia and his administration, well, himself mainly, not his administration, because a member of his administration has been contacting the Saudis throughout the 18 months that Biden was in power. So at the end of the day, we see the diplomatic language adopted by the Gulf country. They want to live in peace with their neighbors. They confirm that diplomacy is the only language. They are not going to create an Arab NATO, regardless of all the speculation that were spread before the arrival of Joe Biden to the area. And I think that is positive to the Middle East and the Gulf.
Well, one of the things that he obviously did use in terms of making sure that this threat remains, this perceived threat, and that is, Ken Stone, the Iran factor. He raised that on a number of occasions. One of them, he said that in the context of Russia and China, that U.S. That it accused Iran of what he called destabilizing activities in West Asia. Now, this is an old tactic that's being used. I call it a tactic because Iran is not a threat. It's not, you know, this whole nuclear weaponization of Iran's nuclear program is something that the U.S. has used in order to basically speed up Iranophobia in this particular trip. Did it work, do you think? Because we're looking at Saudi Arabia and Iran actually conducting talks. Iran, with this 13th administration, has extended a hand and has enhanced its ties with regional countries. So did it ring somewhat hollow?
Yes, it was hollow. I think that your other guest, Monsieur Manier, competently showed that the Gulf Cooperation Council prefers diplomacy to antagonism with Iran. The countries of West Asia, which we call the Middle East here, in an ethnocentric manner, witnessed the U.S. debacle in Afghanistan, and they came to realize that the U.S. could not protect them as it had promised all these decades. And now the countries of West Asia are starting to think a bit more independently about themselves and about relations with their neighbors. And so the Gulf Cooperation Council would prefer diplomacy now rather than hostility towards Iran. And quite reasonably as well, because Iran has not attacked any other country in almost 300 years. Whereas the U.S. and its pit bull, Israel, have attacked dozens of countries in West Asia in the last 70 years. And recently, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Libya, and of course, constantly, the Palestinian people. So it's ridiculous to say that Iran is a threat to the stability of the Middle East. It's rather the hegemonic enterprise of the U.S. It intends to dominate the Middle East and, in fact, dominate the whole world. That is the real threat. And it gives unlimited resources, as Monsieur Manier pointed out, $38 billion this time, and continuous arms transfers and political support, enabling at the UN and everything to the State of Israel, which is used as an attack dog for the U.S. empire in the Middle East. Iran has the inalienable right under the International Atomic Energy Agency and the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty to have a peaceful nuclear program. And that's what they have. They repudiated the idea of having a nuclear bomb many years ago under Ayatollah Khomeini. And on the other hand, Israel maintains a secret nuclear capability and many nuclear weapons, which are never checked or verified by the IAEA. So it's a complete double standard.
Sure. Well, it's very interesting how the Saudi Foreign Minister, Elijah Magnier, came out in the open and put the issue at rest when it came to this so-called defense alliance that Israel was supposed to form with the regional countries, in which Biden obviously discussed that with Israel. And he said point blank, there wasn't any talk about this Israeli integration or defense pact, or I guess maybe the Arab NATO, if you want to also call it that. Which, again, was one of the top priorities of the U.S. Why, then, was this not discussed, do you think?
First of all, because the Middle Eastern country, as the Egyptian president said at the end of the summit, can solve their problems with diplomacy between themselves. Therefore, they do not need Israel to be part of it, because the role of Israel is only destructive, and we have seen that with the Palestinian and the Palestinian territory and how they really dismantled the Madrid summit and the Oslo agreement, and they have no intention to give any right to the Palestinians. They just took their land and increased the settlement. Secondly, because the Arabs are not today in a position to start waging war against anyone. Thirdly, because many Gulf countries and Middle Eastern countries are meeting with Iran, talking to them. The Emirati came out just a couple of days ago saying we have no intention to be part of any allied group or organization or entity against Iran. So today there is no room for a belligerent like Israel and the U.S. to start pushing and waving the scapegoat Iran in the face of the Arab. It's an old-fashioned narrative that is no longer valid. Today there is business. There are development countries need to look after their security by talking to each other. And this is what the Saudis did for four or five rounds with Iran in Iraq. And other Middle Eastern countries are not interested in spending money and sending men to do what? Where there is no war. The war in Yemen has been lost after 7 years. We are starting the year eight. Mm-hmm. And the Saudis accepted the ceasefire. It's over. There are no more wars to be run in the Middle East. And by Biden saying we did not leave, it means he has left. His space in the Middle East is shrinking, is more narrow than ever. He's justifying himself, and the Arabs no longer take him seriously. And what is very important here, we're talking about countries who always depended in their security and their comfort and their ruling on the Americans. Today, they are saying to the Americans, we can solve our problem without you and, of course, without Israel.
Right. Well, it's really remarkable how what you are saying, in some sense, is starkingly similar to what the Hezbollah Secretary General said a few nights back in his speech, Ken Stone, which I'm going to say, he said, elderly President Biden, by his age and his gestures, is an image of an aging America. It seems like the U.S. came to the region, didn't bring much to the table. You know, again, Iranophobia, the threat of Iran, which is a tired thing. There is talks going on, diplomatic talks going on with major countries that Iran is having. And also the fact that you're having Israel trying to be integrated, and that's not working because they have seen, as our guest there said, that Israel is all about force, it seems, and military. Obviously, we've seen how Israel has been attacking Syria. So is it that the U.S. is not being received because of its the way that its tactics are now old and what it is bringing is not much for the regional countries to chew on?
Well, the big picture is that the U.S. empire is in deep trouble. It provoked a proxy war in Ukraine against Russia, and they thought that they could defeat Russia militarily by dragging it into another quagmire such as Afghanistan, and they thought they could defeat it economically by waging, by leveling harsh economic sanctions like the maximum pressure campaign that the U.S. uses against Iran. They thought that they could defeat Russia in that manner. But the big surprise is that the empire, the emperor has no clothes. The empire has no teeth. And when the empire laid sanctions against Russia, trying to cut it off from the economic system, the transfer system, the SWIFT system, and trying to prevent the transfer of Russian gas to Europe and the rest of the Western world, it backfired. And it backfired so badly that Biden, as administration, has been going around the world to try and beg any petroleum producers to please increase your production to make up the slack, because our vassal states in Europe, the European Union, when winter comes, they're going to be shivering in the dark. And so that was the primary reason that Biden went to West Asia, the Middle East, to talk to his oil-producing friends in the Gulf Cooperative Council. And they, you know, they had previously, at least the Saudi minister, the Saudi ruler, and the UAE ruler, the Emirati ruler, had previously even refused to take Biden's phone calls. This was unprecedented in history. And so he had to make a trip there to get down on his hands and knees and ask him to increase production a little. So the U.S. is in a situation they didn't anticipate when they launched their war against Russia, their proxy war through Ukraine. And this is the situation that the U.S. empire now finds itself in, scrambling about to talk to Venezuela and other countries to up their production.
Sure. Well, Elijah Magner, I mean, if I'm Saudi Arabia and I'm looking at the way that the U.S. obviously has sanctioned Russia and its approach towards Russia in terms of the Ukraine conflict, we can then go to the G20 summit that happened recently, of which the U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, warned China, saying that, you know, you are supporting Russia by buying oil from Russia. So if I'm the Saudi Crown Prince, I'm thinking, if I see that type of approach by the U.S., I would think, well, wait a minute. Saudi Arabia was the number one seller of oil to China. Russia took over that position, but it still sells a lot of oil to China. Wouldn't the Saudi Crown Prince then think maybe the U.S. is going to use the same pressure on Saudi Arabia, because we know that the China, U.S. has China on its radars?
Well, we have seen positions from Saudi Arabia that was remarkably new when Mohammed bin Salman rejected a call from Joe Biden to increase the oil just a few months ago that forced Joe Biden to come to the Saudi and beg for oil. That is clearly the upper hand of countries in West Asia over the Americans. If they united, they would form a very strong, powerful unity and country against the U.S. hegemony. Well, yes, China and Saudi Arabia signed strategic deals of many billions. Saudi Arabia and Russia signed also the commercial and military deals with many billions on the tables. That means the countries in the region, in the Middle Eastern region and West Asia, are shifting their attention, not completely from the Americans, because the Americans are still a superpower. They still have influence. They have 750 military bases in 80 countries. But today, there is a real challenge to the U.S. hegemony. So the world has been divided now between countries who favor the U.S. and Western allies, particularly, who are dragged along the U.S. against Russia, and the other represent the rest of the world not agreeing or even opposing the U.S. policy and its unilateralism that wages war and economic sanction indiscriminately against entire population, not only West Asia, but also in Latin America and in different parts of the world. So that is started today. There is a real challenge to this hegemony. Doesn't mean that U.S. that dominated the world since 1991 at the time of the perestroika until 2015 when Russia stepped in Syria. It means this challenge is serious. Russia and China are together with the BRICS country, with Iran, and they form more than a third of the population. And with all the countries that are not standing with the U.S., are two-thirds of the population. So we see the West on one side and the rest of the world on the other side.
Sure.
That is very significant.
It is indeed. Another selling point that the U.S. had, Ken Stone, which I'm trying to, again, figure this out, is that it assured the regional countries, in particular Saudi Arabia, that it's going to provide it in security, that it will make sure that it will provide security for it. I'm not too sure that can be logically actually applicable when you take a look at the way that Saudi Arabia lost the war in Yemen, or when it comes to even Israel, when that Iron Dome did not really work that well the last time around there was a war on Gaza, where you had many of those rockets penetrate and pass by the Iron Dome. And other countries, does this, again, show that this is not something that the regional countries are buying, that the U.S. is really not capable of just coming to their rescue, assuring them of their safety?
Well, I think your other guest, Mr. Manier, he may not have used the words, but I think that he made the point that the U.S. Is no longer the sole superpower in a unipolar world. We are now into a multipolar world where Russia and China provide a center around which other countries can rally to resist the U.S. Attempt for hegemony over the whole world. The U.S., contrary to what to Biden says, where he will not walk away and leave a vacuum to be filled by Russia, China, or Iran, in West Asia, the U.S. has not left anywhere. They are still occupying Iraq, even though the Iraqi government passed a resolution after the assassination of General Soleimani asking him to leave. They are still sitting on Syria's oil fields and stealing the oil and the wheat. They are still in Libya. They are still helping the Saudis in attacking Yemen. So they haven't left, but people in the region are asking him to leave or to keep their hands off and let them deal with their neighbors independently and diplomatically and not be used as tools in the U.S. quest for hegemony.
Thank you very much, Kent Stone, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. And thank you, Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitatway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.